I'm Reinhard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 176 for the weekend starting 12 May 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, government reverses course on TV encryption.
Also this week, Windows to play nicely with Android and iOS. We'll have all the details from Build. Telkom share price surges on positive results. And first thoughts on the Samsung Galaxy S8.
Time to lift the curtains on another podcast.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Reinhard?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. So before I forget again, let's jump straight into that quiz.
Oh, yes.
You want to do the first question?
I'll add it in bold. So the first question in this week's quiz, former MTN South Africa CEO Ahmad Farouk has joined which Pan-African telecommunications company?
Second question, Vodacom this week said it had gone live with its first Internet of Things site. It was in Midrand at their head office. What 3GPP-backed IoT technology, there's enough jargon, is it deploying and who is doing the deployment for it?
The third question, Adapt IT this week announced the acquisition of which technology supplier to the hospitality industry?
And our fourth question, Telkom subsidiary BCX will pump 60 million rand into which programming skills development hub?
And the last question, Apple surpassed the market capitalization milestone this week. What was it?
And it's quite a remarkable number.
Oh, big bucks.
But let's jump right into the show. And there's we haven't recorded in 2 weeks, so there's lots to talk about. And undoubtedly, the biggest news in the South African context of the last 10 days or so has been this news that the government has again changed its view on digital TV encryption. Flip-flopped, I think, is the appropriate
way. Which way are we going?
I've actually lost count how many times we've changed, flip-flopped on this issue. We were in favor of encryption, then we were against encryption, then we were in favor of encryption, then we were against encryption, and now we're in favor of encryption again. And it really seems to be based on which direction the wind is blowing.
It sounds like a bidding war, actually.
Anyway. I guess it's which commercial vested interest the politicians are listening to, depending on the time of the day. We have a new Minister of Communications now, Ayanda Dlodlo, and she has replaced Faith Mutambi. Faith Mutambi, of course, is very much in the anti-encryption camp, so much so she was accused of being in bed with MultiChoice, a claim that she vehemently denied. The previous minister tried to create a middle way, if you like. Yunus Karim tried to carve a middle path, and that didn't work at all. MultiChoice objected strenuously to his proposals. And here we are now, back with a new minister and another change in policy. So now we're in favor of encryption again. Big question about what that means for all the set-top boxes that have already been manufactured and are out in the field. Do those now have to be recalled? Can they be recalled? More delays, I think, to the whole digital migration process.
That's the biggest problem here, so it's delays.
It's the delays, indeed. So we haven't heard anything really official or any real detail from the Department of Communications yet on what exactly this change in policy is going to mean. I'm sure they're still figuring it out themselves. What's interesting is that this case is currently a case brought by the government against ETV at the Constitutional Court. The arguments in that case were heard at the Concourt a couple of months ago, and we're currently awaiting the Constitutional Court judgment on that matter. That case is Faith Mutambi versus, or the Minister of Communications, and it was then Faith Mutambi versus ETV, over the victory that ETV won at the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein, middle of last year, I think it was, or earlier last year. That was an appeal of an earlier High Court judgment, which went in favor of the minister and MultiChoice. So a real mess. So we now have the new minister saying that this is not the case. We currently have a constitutional court battle going on, brought by the minister's predecessor, and we're expecting a judgment in that case any day or any week now. I see the SACP, which has been in favor of encryption, has called on the new Minister of Communications to withdraw her appeal at the Constitutional Court. I've been meaning to speak to a lawyer this week to get a view on this, because I'm not sure whether that case can actually be withdrawn, given that the arguments have already been heard. I need to check that, but I suspect that the Constitutional Court has to now hand down judgment because the arguments have been heard. Yeah. I don't know the legalities there, and I need to check that with a lawyer. But if that is the case, then we're going to have a judgment anyway, and the judgment of the Constitutional Court will determine whether we have encryption or not, whether the minister likes it or not. So it, the Constitutional Court still could determine that the appeal court in Bloemfontein erred in its earlier judgment in favor of ETV, and that in fact we're not going to have encryption. So it's a big legal mess. I think it shows that this government doesn't know what it's doing. We see this reflected almost every day now. This morning we saw the CEO of Eskom, the former CEO of Eskom, being reappointed, and the ANC itself issuing a statement condemning the Eskom board for reappointing him. It seems highly unlikely that the Eskom board would have gone ahead with this if it hadn't got the explicit approval or go-ahead from the president to do so. So have we got the ANC at war with his own party now? It is deeply troubling what's going on in this country. And I think the digital TV thing has unfortunately become, this whole sector in a way has become a victim of the war within that's playing out inside the ANC, in that no one can make a decision one way or the other. And you see this policy flip-flopping going on, and the ANC is being pulled in one direction one moment and another direction the other moment. There's no agreement within the ANC about this encryption issue. It was agreed at their policy conference that there would be encryption in set-top boxes. So that's the official position. But you've got a former Minister of Communications, and presumably backed by the President, and certainly it was the wish of the former Chief Operating Officer of the SABC, Klaudi Mutsaneng, for there not to be encryption. We don't know the full story there yet. I'm sure it'll come out in the fullness of time. But I think it's symptomatic of what's going on in the country at the moment, in that we're kind of leaderless. And we've got a ruling party that is at war with itself, and it's having very real effects, not just on the ICT sector, but this is a classic example of it, but on the broader economy.
And this is certainly what happened when the focus is not where it should be. You know, the focus on getting these things resolved, focus on the tech industry, how do you boost small business? It just doesn't seem like the focus is certainly elsewhere, you know. Inter-party political agendas, maybe, I don't know. It's just a pity we can't get down to the real meat and bones of you know, getting this kind of thing sorted out.
And we see it in the economy, and the state of the economy, our anemic economic growth. We're potentially going into a recession later this year. And it's all flows out of this. Of course, we've got the ANC conferences coming up this year. I think it's a policy conference in June and then the elective conference in December. Hopefully after that, I mean, it's a long way to wait, but hopefully after that we'll have some clarity on where we're going to go forward. And hopefully we have the right leadership to take the economy forward. I think that we all know what that means. So here we go with another change in the digital television policy. I think listeners to this podcast know my views on encryption. I think it's a bad idea. It's a complex subject, I agree, but I think that a lot of people have had the wool pulled over their eyes on this issue, particularly by the local manufacturing industry and by the proponents of encryption. I think ultimately, I think that encryption is bad for consumers and bad for the poor, because you're going to have these boxes in perpetuity, whereas set-top boxes were only ever meant to be an interim measure as we move to digital, and in future they'll just simply be part of the television you buy. Now we're going to have integrated receivers or
it's all just stuff that pushes up the cost and makes it a convoluted process.
It is expensive, and you have to have support centers and all sorts of stuff, and no one else in the world is doing this except for a few dodgy countries. I think Ukraine is the only example I've seen that's actually gone for encryption and DTT. The rest of the world, Europe, which we historically have learned from or borrowed standards and ideas from and emulated, has not gone for encryption. We'd be copying a couple of or only one that I'm aware of, there may be one or two more, a country in the world, and that's Ukraine. Mm. Is a Ukraine a company, a country whose examples we should be following? I'm not sure. I doubt it.
And you know, when you look, I wonder what the advisory conversations are when it comes to making up, you know, making these decisions around these technologies. I mean, when you're presented with facts like that, where, you know, we won't be following the example of best practice, but rather going with something that, for all intents and purposes, seems like an ulterior motive, or, you know. It's not for the good of the people. It's not for the good of the country.
And there also certainly seems to be an idea that encryption. I mean, we saw it in the SACP statement that was issued a couple of days ago. There seems to be this idea that that encryption should be used to somehow punish NSPAT and MultiChoice, and the SACP statement going on about. You know, NSPAT is part of the Broederbond or was part of the Broederbond. I mean, sure, there were links there in the 80s and before, but. You know, they built a company largely, I mean, certainly MultiChoice, the DSTV business, was built after the end of apartheid. They had a good dispensation given to them. I mean, they had a favorable dispensation in that they got the Mnet license back in the mid-1980s. But there was competition introduced to DSTV back in the 1990s. Centec was licensed. Centec and SABC were licensed. To provide a service called AstroSat, which failed because MultiChoice made the right decisions around which technology to use. They went for MP2 digital broadcast technology as opposed to analog, which the SABC and Centec decided to use. And then the Centec and SABC solution ultimately failed. I'm sure there were other factors at play, like content choices and that sort of thing. But is it right to punish MultiChoice for its success, especially 30 years, 40 years after it received that Mnet license? I don't know. Probably not. If you're worried about the lack of competition in the pay TV market, then surely there are other ways of looking at this, regulatory ways of intervening in the market and saying, actually, you know, MultiChoice, you have to unbundle SuperSport. That to me would seem like a much more logical way of approaching it, and it's certainly what regulators in other markets have done. In the UK, for example, the regulator there has told BSkyB that it has to license some of the Premier Football games to other providers. It would seem natural to me to look at unbundling SuperSport in some way, because that's clearly how MultiChoice continues its dominance in the space. Equally, I think MultiChoice is much less worried about free-to-air competitors or even pay-TV-based competitors on the terrestrial platform. I think it's much more worried about what the internet is going to do to
streaming its business. Services. Oh, yeah.
Netflix is a much more serious threat to MultiChoice's business in the long term than a bunch of local startups in DTT. To be frank.
Oh, exactly.
Services like Netflix are going to eat into that DSTV premium business first. They're not going to eat at the bottom where I think a lot of these DTT players are going to be playing. So I think that MultiChoice is probably facing its most serious competitive threat now from internet streaming than from anything that's happening locally.
Yeah. I mean, the SABC isn't really the that crown jewels that we really hoped it would be. And if that was the case, you know, then this would have been a much trickier conversation. But you don't have alternative options, and you know, you can't penalize a guy who's been successful for planning a business, into the future. You know, making the right decision for the future of the company rather than for the future of a few individuals who's obviously benefiting from it somewhere along the line.
I mean, that's what I find troubling about the SACP statement. I mean, sure, NSPAT in the old days was close to the government. They were. I mean, the links with the National Party go right back to NSPAT's founding. But by the same token, the company has metamorphosized into something completely different now. I mean, it's not the old Nationale Part anymore. It's a globalized company that has assets in things like Tencent and I think Mail.ru, they're still an investor in. They're a global internet company, and they own a big pay TV operation in South Africa, most of which was built post-94. Do you punish them because they enjoyed a favorable dispensation before 1994? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, by the same, if you were to argue the same thing, you'd have to argue, well, then Eskom needs to be punished, then Sasol needs to be punished, then ISCOR, whatever it's called now, needs to be punished. All these companies that were built on, and under the apartheid government that enjoyed the largesse of the National Party government, you'd have to go out and punish them retrospectively now. I mean, how far do you go back? How far do you do this? I think that the SACP statement, I found it troubling in that regard, let's put it that way. But, unfortunately, the problem with this digital terrestrial television migration is not actually so much to do with broadcasting. It's to do with the fact that these broadcasters are sitting on spectrum that the telecommunications companies need so they can deliver the broadband that's going to make the television companies irrelevant.
But again, you know, I come back to what I said. If SABC was a more proactive company and really spent the money where it should have been spent, it wouldn't have been so fearful of this change. You know, maybe it could have had a relatively strong online offering. You know, even if it's free content for you know, free local content, public access TV. I mean, we know how well that's worked in the States. We need this.
Yeah, the next big challenge, the next big opportunity, I think, is figuring out how to. Is how to get local content, and there's massive demand for local content. I mean, just look how big those soapies are on SABC channels. I think there's huge demand for locally generated content that's delivered to mobile devices. Whoever cracks that is going to do very well.
There are some startups. We did an interview with one, the name completely escaped me now, that offered broadcasting to mobile devices, local content.
I think I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I've also forgotten the name. Not Tulin Tulu.
That's the one I thought of. But in again, a great offering, but I think services like YouTube is just going to crush that kind of thing, you know?
If they do local content, see, the thing is local, and YouTube doesn't do any local content.
Well, I mean, okay, sure, maybe I'm talking about local content, you know, locally produced content that's not necessarily stuff produced for TV broadcast.
Oh, user-generated local content.
Yeah, user-generated stuff. I mean, that is still an old-school industry. You know, the broadcast, TV broadcast industry, the way you produce for TV is so much different to what you produce. And I mean, YouTube as a platform, but you can still produce good quality, high production value local content on a platform like that.
Yeah, but there's clearly a big opportunity there for whoever grabs it. And I think the SABC, if it can get its act together, which hopefully it's now going to do with the new board and the exit of the former COO, I think there's a huge opportunity for the SABC to package what it has and deliver it wirelessly to mobile users.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt that some of the content that the SABC produces is in huge demand. Probably not what you and I watch, but... you know, some of those soapies and I don't even know their names, I don't watch them, but I see the ratings and they're watched by millions of people every day, so there's huge demand.
But I mean, the SABC also has this incredible archive of amazing South African content going back decades.
Which of course is the subject of huge contention because it's alleged that Claudio Motsoeneng sold it off at pittance to MultiChoice.
Well, that was going to be my point. Now, Showmax has started broadcasting some of that old content. I'm talking about really good quality South African movies from 70s, 60s, 70s. And I've been watching a few of them over the last few years. Just kind of, you know, I'm a movie maker, so to speak. I enjoy making videos, and I wanted to see what kind of where we come from in that scene. And it was absolutely phenomenal. I don't think we've got that kind of quality or that kind of production value today, in many ways, or storytelling from the SABC. You know, it's new, innovative content. We need that so desperately.
Indeed. And short form content as well. I think particularly for mobile, short form content is going to be the key success factor. You don't for one thing, you don't want to watch half an hour video on your phone. For another thing, people can't afford to watch a half hour video on their phone because the amount of data it consumes. But for compelling short form content, I think that's probably where the market's actually going to start. I'm sure lots of the broadcasters are looking at it, and you know, I'm sure there's stuff coming down the
line. Again, social media is really making it difficult. Live streaming video now. I mean, yes, we don't have, you know, that TV quality from guys shooting live video from, you know, in the living room. But it's getting there as the technologies improve.
It is getting better and better. I still think you have to. I mean, I still think there's going to be massive demand, no matter how much user-generated content there is. I think the demand will still be there for professionally created stories.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But those, if you look at vlogs and some of the best vloggers in the world now, and I'm referring to Casey Neistat and Ben Brown and those guys, the quality of their daily vlogs, they produce this every day. Well, some of them, Ben Brown doesn't vlog every day anymore, but is really superb. I mean, John Olsen's another vlogger. They do 4K and 8K every day. They shoot. This is cinematic 8K. Quality. Yeah. They play with these. they call it team overkill. but they play with they're trying to make the best quality version of that blog. Mm. And if you look at kind of these early adopters doing what they can do then, I don't think it's a far stretch to imagine a world where, you know, news can be user-generated, so you're tuning to a journalist reading out the news to his audience base from his living room because he's been able to produce, you know, a packaged bit of content, similar to what we're doing on the podcast now, but that's just true. Something daily.
Yeah, but people make careers out of it, as we've seen in that space. Yeah. Mm. I'm still trying to get past this 8K video thing. I mean, where are they even putting that? Can YouTube support 8K?
No, they just – look, I mean, they all their stuff is 4K. They upload in 4K.
Yeah.
But it's just a clarity. I mean, if you shoot an 8K today, you might not be able to showcase anywhere. But when you drop 8K down to 4K or even 1080p, the sharpness of your picture is still far superior than shooting natively 2.7K or 1080p.
Mm. Yeah, apparently there were quite a few 8K TVs at CES this year. Would have loved to have seen one of those.
Beautiful. Oh, I can only imagine.
Imagine having like a 200-inch 8K TV.
Terrible. Terrible world we live in.
How will we cope? I walked into the digital experience in Four Ways, by the way. It's for those who don't know, it's a technology retail shop in Johannesburg.
Yes.
They've got a big Samsung section there. And they had a massive curved Samsung TV there. I forget the size. I think it was 110 inches or something. And so I asked the salesman, how much?
Probably one more, two more.
420,000 rand.
What?
He said, don't worry, we'll send a team to install it for you as well.
So, I hope so.
Well, it's a minimum I'd expect.
Delivery included.
I hope it comes with a nice bow tie around it, you know. But it's amazing. I mean, the people who buy TVs that expensive in this country. So.
Yeah.
But as I pointed out to the salesman, I said to him, well, I'll come back in 3 years when it's a quarter of the price.
Well, in a few years, we won't have TV screens. We'll have projection on walls. I think that's where everything's going to go, the clarity. You know, and then with VR and AR, I mean, your screen doesn't have to be a big thing. You can just have a little screen in your glasses or on your contacts. That'll give you the illusion of a 100-inch screen.
I'm still not convinced about that. When people flop down on their couches, I think they just want a TV in front of them. Maybe for video gaming.
Have you seen people flop down on a couch with a phone in their hand in front of them? I don't think it's a fast stretch.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. In fact, I think most people sit with their phones in front of the TV now. I do. The TV show is getting boring. I'll switch to my phone.
Yeah, exactly. It's fascinating how we've become this multitasking generation. I mean, when we were young, we watched TV and we were focused on it, focused on every movement it's making. Now your eyes are on your screen 50% of the time on your phone and on your TV.
And we still somehow know what's going on the TV.
Yeah. Your brain's learned to adapt. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what our kids
do. We'll see if we'll have dementia by the time we're in our 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we got a bit off track there, didn't we? So Microsoft is having its annual Build conference in Seattle this week. I managed to catch a bit of it last night, actually. I see all these same guys presenting at these things. I've never remember their names. But some really interesting stuff coming out of Build this year. And I thought the one that really grabbed my attention was that Microsoft has announced, I guess in the same way that Apple has made it really nice to use all of their devices like iPhone and iPad and MacBook and the desktop Macs, in that you can see your notifications on your desktop and all these sort of things. They play very nicely to each other. You can drop files from your phone to your Mac, to your desktop, that sort of thing. And so what Microsoft is doing is they've announced that they're going to do something similar, except they're going to be playing very nicely with iPhone and Android, because, of course, they don't really have a mobile platform of their own anymore.
Yeah.
And what I found fascinating during the presentations was that there was not a single Windows phone used in any of the demonstration videos. That is interesting. In fact, in the main video that I saw, they were using iPhones, it's almost as if Microsoft is saying, well, mobile as a platform doesn't matter to us anymore. In terms of owning a platform. And so now they're fully embracing Android and iOS. In fact, if you go into the settings in the fall creators update, which they announced as well, to Windows 10, which is coming out in our springtime, there'll be a phone option now, and you'll be able to fully integrate your Windows desktop with your phone, and you can do things like copy and paste. So you can copy and paste on your phone and paste on your Windows desktop.
But I take it this is on the Android iOS platform.
Android and iOS. And across to Windows PC. So the cloud clipboard looks really cool. I think Apple announced something like that, similar to that a while ago. Mm. A lot of it is actually catching up to macOS, but doing it more broadly across more ecosystems, because you certainly can't do that between macOS and Android. And I don't think Apple will ever do that. Apple likes to pretend that nothing else exists beyond the ecosystem. So I think it's a very smart move by Microsoft, actually, because it positions them as a more of an open player than Apple.
Oh, yes. It's an incredible move. And I'm almost surprised. Like, I'm wondering why they didn't do this sooner. Especially considering the massive two flops that they've had with, two flops in a row in terms of launching the Windows Mobile platform. And clearly, they for some reason they just cannot break into that market. But for them, as the world's biggest software maker, and they still have such a big Windows base, just to be able to integrate them, it makes so much sense. Keep your existing users happy. I want to use a Windows device, but I want an iPhone. Make it easier for me as a Windows fan. We know Apple is Apple is quite tight on the environment, but this makes a lot of sense. It's just a pity I don't have any Windows devices anymore to try it out.
No, you're completely in the Apple ecosystem, which is fine because you've got that great integration between all your devices. But I'm someone who uses multiple devices. I've got a Windows laptop, I've got an iPad, and I've got an Android phone.
So it'll work perfectly for you.
Yeah,
the integration.
The integration will work great. Yeah.
I mean, Windows notebooks are becoming a lot more attractive in terms of functionality. Apple is becoming less attractive as a platform, the macOS platform with the really great designed hardware. We've spoken about this before, but new Windows computers these days really, design-wise, they look amazing and they look and feel great. They've got nice screen resolution, something that was lacking for many years in the mid-2000s. And now with this, Windows is making, or Microsoft is seemingly making an aggressive series of moves to kind of get back into a leading position, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they still sell by far the most laptops in the world. I mean, it's sitting on probably 80-90% of desktops, on laptops and desktops for that matter. Microsoft still dominates in the PC world. But Apple has always had a bit of a design appeal, you're right. And I think that there has been some change there. I think that PCs have become sexier. And I think Microsoft's own hardware has played a big role there.
Oh, yeah, their stuff is amazing. I mean their Surface range.
That Surface laptop that they announced a week and a half ago, we didn't put on the show notes today. Maybe we should have, because it's really an interesting device. But those Surface tablets that they do, and that the device I actually really want on my desk is that it's called the Surface Studio.
The big one.
The big boy. Desktop. Oh man, it looks beautiful. And we're big fans of Leo Laporte's podcasts and This Week in Tech, and he has one in his studio now, and I think it just looks absolutely amazing sitting on his desk and the way he can.
That swivel screen moving up and down.
It's just stunning hardware. So I think Microsoft is actually very clever to get into and start to do its own reference design, because I think it's helping the rest of the industry see what can be done with Windows. And we're seeing some really, really cool products coming out now from companies like Dell and Acer and Lenovo, and they're coming up with some really interesting designs.
I guess Microsoft in some ways also, they've started to overcome this problem, but for a long time other notebook manufacturers, essentially their hardware competitors, obviously had a lot of clout over the license agreements, which prevented Microsoft potentially from going out and obviously killing it with notebooks. I mean, imagine you're killing your own dealer base or license base, because you're producing much better hardware than what they can.
They were always reluctant to do that, but I think it's a smart move to start to do that, because they're not going to take away the bulk of the business from the OEMs. I mean, the products they're producing are high-end. They're going to appeal to only a small subset of geeks and geeks with fat wallets.
Because, you know, there's a market. We see what Mac is doing, Apple Mac is doing. Yeah,
yeah. And I think they learned from Google here, because Google's had its own reference designs in the Pixel. I forget what they were called before. They were called Pixel. Nexus. Nexus and Pixel phones. And, you know, I think that, certainly at one point in time, I mean, those were the devices to have. I think with the launch of things like the Galaxy S8, there are sexier Android phones out there now. But I think they're doing really good stuff. And it's smart as well, because, you know, they hold these keynotes and people watch them and they say, hey, that looks really cool. And then people think, well, maybe I think should think again about Windows. You know, people who used to be on Windows and maybe moved across to Mac, and maybe they're a little, you know, maybe they don't think that much of the new Mac lineup, or they're getting a bit frustrated that the Mac Pro hasn't been updated for a long time.
Yeah.
And maybe it's time to go back to Windows. And the fact that Microsoft is doing this really sexy hardware makes it look cool again. And I don't think we should underestimate how much of an impact the cool factor around a company has in people's buying decisions. A lot of people buy iPhone simply because they associate Apple as being a cool product.
It's a premium lifestyle brand that everybody aspires to. Yeah.
And I think that Microsoft for a long time was regarded as this operating system, or the company that develops this operating system that you reluctantly use at the office, that crashes all the time, why on earth would I want to use this thing at home? So I think by coming up with their own reference designs, their own really good-looking hardware, and it helps that Windows 10 is a great OS, they're helping reverse that perception, I think, to some extent. Maybe not in the mass market yet, but certainly amongst people who keep an eye on the computer industry and who are interested in, you know, the geeks like us.
Yeah.
I think we're paying attention to Microsoft again. Definitely. When 5 years ago, let's go buy Mac. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Windows 2000... I'm going to go to Linux.
Windows Vista.
Windows Vista. They have been making a series of right moves, and it's making us early adopters and geeks going, ooh, this is interesting. Let's maybe stick around and see what they have to say.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what else they're bringing.
But they made lots of other announcements. I recommend, if you've got the time, to go and have a look at the Build keynotes, because there were some really interesting things. They announced the sort of mixed reality headsets.
HoloLens.
They've got some cool stuff coming out there with their partners. Acer announced something quite interesting. Well, they announced an interesting headset from Acer. So I think they're calling it – I wasn't paying too much attention during that part of the video, but they've kind of combined their AR and VR initiatives into this thing called Windows Mixed Reality. I think they're kind of trying to – hedge their bets a bit in some ways, because they said in the presentation they don't know whether AR or VR is going to be the next big thing. So I think they're kind of hedging their bets and saying, well, they're both the next big thing.
I think those two aren't mutually exclusive. AR and VR will need to be complementing, because you can't use one or the other and be happy with the technology. There's clear benefits to AR many more over VR, I think.
So, yeah, the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update will be out later this year in our springtime, and it looks pretty cool. I particularly like the mobile integration, so I'm really looking forward to that and playing around with that.
Yeah.
I was running the Windows Insider builds on my PC, but I went back to the stable builds after I had a few too many problems. So I won't be playing with it until the final release, but it looks pretty cool. Looking forward to it. On that note, we need to take a quick ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. So let's talk about the Galaxy S8. I've had my insert
angels singing.
I've had my review on now for about a week, and it is absolutely gorgeous. I only have one problem with this phone. It's all screen, so which means it's very fragile, which means you have to put a case on it, which means you're going to cover up the aesthetics of it, because it really is a stunning looking phone. I mean, they really have outdone themselves here. Edge-to-edge glass. They call it the infinity display. The front of the phone is almost entirely screen. And it's really nice. I've never been a huge fan of TouchWiz, but with the Galaxy S8, they have made it a really, really slick, nice version of Android. It's much more. They've added some really nice features to it, but it's more vanilla Android. It's
good. That's nice.
They've added some really nice touches to it. They've spent a lot of design time working on the design of the software. The icons, just the look and feel of it, it's really stunning. It looks like a product that Apple would produce, to be honest.
It does. It feels very solid, to remarkably solid. Mm. It feels like there's a bit of metal in the body somewhere. Just it has that slight weight that makes you go, "Ooh, there's a piece of heavy metal in there." But looking at this, it feels, I have a very thin case on my iPhone because I don't like cases to begin with. And the only reason why I don't not like, why I don't have using my phone without a case is because of scratches. And this is the only thing I can see that could be a problem. I don't know if it'll be that fragile when it falls. It seems to be, I mean, the way that it could potentially fall, yes, you may get a chip if it lands just kind of on the glass bit of it, but there's still a lot of frame around the bottom that I would imagine, on the edges where a phone usually would fall. There's no glass on the edge itself, if that makes sense. And the illusion of the glass on the edge is there. But I would definitely use this phone as is.
Shall we throw it out the window and see what happens?
Let's try. what would Samsung say?
It's a really, really good looking phone. And the more I played with it, there's just these subtle touches everywhere that you get the feeling that other Android manufacturers don't put into their phones. Just little things like guidance here. We're showing you this particular screen because of this reason. We've noticed you're doing this. You might want to do this. Little minor touches that. The software seems to blend in so well with the rounded edges on the phone, and it's just gorgeous. And of course, the hardware in there is top of the line. I mean, it's got all the latest LTE. It's got a very fast processor, Samsung made processor. The LTE is impressive. I'm on Telkom Mobile. I pick up 4G Plus or LTE Advanced in many of the places I go, including at home. I have LTE Advanced connection, and the Wi-Fi is very good as well. On my fiber at home, I regularly get close to 100 megabit per second up and down over Wi-Fi on the phone. So
that's impressive.
Yeah, it's very, very, very impressive.
And the camera, what do you think of the
quality? The camera is outstanding. I was a bit worried because it's only a 12 megapixel shooter, but I don't know how they've done it. But apparently, it's exactly the same camera as in the S7, and I didn't use the S7, so I can't really compare with that model. But of all the phones I've used, it takes the best photographs by far.
Interesting. We should do a little iPhone versus Samsung shootout.
We should.
So you can take the best photographs and sell it for R1 million.
Yeah. I must say, it's the first time in a long time that I've had people say, "Oh, is that the new Samsung?" People actually showing interest in a phone. I certainly haven't seen that in many years. I think the last time someone said, "Oh, is that the new iPhone?" Oh, is that the new Samsung? Which I don't think I've ever had
Yeah, before. I've never heard that.
So quite a bit of interest in the device. And it's certainly noticeable. You can see it's a Samsung S8. Its design is very different to anything else in the market. It looks like a polished pebble in a way.
It's not slippery at all. I thought it would be slippery. But
it looks slippery.
The iPhone is very slippery, which is one of the reasons I don't like using it without the SIM case.
Yeah.
Solid.
Yeah. The only other bugbear I have about it, and really it's not a major bugbear, is the position of the fingerprint reader next to the camera.
At the back. So you have to use your index finger.
You're sometimes hitting the camera and smudging the camera. The rumors are that they were planning to integrate the fingerprint scanner under the screen on the home button. And they couldn't get it right before the launch, so they moved it to the back, and they had to do it in a hurry, and the only place they could put it was next to the camera.
Well, that was moving the battery, but I think they tried that last year.
Oh, yes. they could have put it where... I like the position of the fingerprint reader on the LG G6. It's sort of two-thirds of the way up in the middle on the back of the phone, which is a really good location for the fingerprint reader. Mm. Maybe they didn't want to replace the Samsung logo on the back, which is where that's located with the fingerprint reader. But I don't think the fingerprint is in the best position. You do get used to it. Eventually, you do find it. But sometimes you still struggle. You know, sometimes I have to look behind and then put my finger on it. It's not a deal-breaker, but it is a little bit of an irritant. The home button's also changed. They've got rid of the physical home button. It's now part of the screen. And like on the Apple iPhone 7, it's got a force feedback type of effect. Yes, you like press it hard. Press it hard and it feels like it's like a tactile feedback you get from it. Mm. But all in all, it's a very good phone. I'll have a review on this up hopefully sometime during the course of next week. But I can comfortably say that this is the best phone that's been released to date.
It certainly looks the part. Mm.
I'd give it, if I was going to give a rating out of 9 out of 10, if I was to give it a rating out of 10, I would give it 9.5.
Oh, really? Wow. That's pretty impressive. Mm.
Very good. And the only reason I'm not giving it a full 10 out of 10 is because of the position of the fingerprint reader and the fact that they didn't deliver the Bixby voice integration.
Bonus points awarded for the fact that they do have a 3.5mm audio jack.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Did you get the Gear VR with that at all?
No, unfortunately, they didn't send that one to review. But they did send the wireless charger, so that works brilliantly as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, doesn't charge as quickly as the fast charging cable, but which charges remarkably fast. But the wireless dock is very nice. You just put it on your desk and plug it in, and your phone is charged up. I'm not 100% sure about charging your phone on and off all day. I'm not sure how that impacts the battery. Mm-hmm. I think battery technology has improved dramatically, so maybe it doesn't degrade the battery as much as it used to. But certainly, it's convenient to have a little wireless charger on your desk, and just when you're sitting there, just pop your phone in it and not worry about having to.
We need to all exercise conscious cell phone battery charging to begin with. I mean. Mm-hmm. I once read that you should charge your battery like you charge your body. You know, you only eat when you're hungry. You know, when your battery drops, you know you're going to have a long night. You charge it for an hour or two before, in the afternoon before you go out. That's always kind of kept me juiced up.
That's good advice. Suddenly I'm hungry for some reason.
It's your phone battery, that's 50%, that's why.
Yes, I need to juice up my phone. I need to juice up myself. Where can I plug in here?
we got some in the back.
Cool. And the last bit of news that I wanted to chat about this week was Telkom putting out an earnings update yesterday, and the share price jumping more than 7%. Certainly that restructuring that Sipho Maseko has led there is certainly starting to pay off in a big way, and I see the share price currently around 80 rand 50. They touched a new 8 or 9 year high this morning. They were sitting there around the 82 rand 48 this morning, which was the highest level it's been since 2009, since before they sold their 50% stake in Vodacom. Just to give you some idea of the performance of this company, since Sipho Maseko took over, I think it was back in 2013, the share price has rallied by about 300%. It was really badly oversold back then, sitting I think at around, what was it, around 13 rand a share, 10, 12 rand a share somewhere, I think in early 2013. He then took over, and it's been rallying strongly ever since. So now sitting above the 80 rand level, and their results are out on the 5th of June. We're actually heading into results season now. Vodacom's results are out on Monday. Should be interesting. Be nice to do an updated comparison of how all these operators are doing. But certainly based on the earnings update, it seems that Telkom's turnaround is on track. And that, ladies and gentlemen, takes care of the news. As a motorbike revs in the background, let's get on to our winners and losers of the week. Did you see the story last week about Get Smarter?
Yes, I did.
What a deal.
Very nice. Yes.
What a deal. In fact, I'm getting the CEO onto the Tech Central podcast in a couple of weeks.
Oh, brilliant.
So it'll be a really, really interesting chat. But Get Smarter, they develop online courses in partnership with the universities, and then they sell these online and do a revenue split between the university and themselves.
Brilliant.
They've just been bought out by a company listed on the NASDAQ in New York. For just under 1.4 billion rand. Oh. This is a Cape Town startup. It's almost a Shuttleworth type of story.
Jeez,
So they've just been bought out by this company. They'll continue to run independently. They're bought out by this company called 2U, I think they're called. And they were or are competitors in the global market, and they're working with not only South African universities, but Cambridge University and a number of international universities as well. I'm going to get a more detailed story when we sit down with them in a couple of weeks about their backstory and what led to this massive deal. 1.4 billion rand for a Cape Town-based startup is a big deal. That's in anyone's language. Yeah. But they're our winner this week, Get Smarter, and look out for their interview coming up in a couple of weeks. And our loser this week, we touched on it a bit earlier on in the podcast, is Eskom's board for reappointing the former CEO, Brian Molefe, who resigned under a cloud, I think it was just less than 6 months ago, over the allegations in the Public Protector's report about his links to the Guptas. Hmm. And reports of deals he did with them, and anyway, he went off to become an MP, presumably because he was expecting to be appointed to the cabinet of President Jacob Zuma, possibly as finance minister. The rumors at the time of the reshuffle were that Malusi Gigaba got that job because the ANC told Zuma in no uncertain terms that they would not accept Brian Molefe being appointed as finance minister. So Molefe not appearing in the new cabinet, and now he's reportedly resigned as an MP, and his last official day as an MP will be the Sunday, so I guess in effect today, Friday, and that he'll start back at Eskom on Monday as CEO, despite the fact that he has not cleared the cloud of stench of corruption hanging over his head. The board has seen fit to reappoint him using the excuse that the Minister of Public Enterprises, Lynn Brown, told them that the 30 million rand retirement payment that they were going to be making to him was unacceptable. The board then met to discuss this, and they couldn't reach an agreement with Molefe on the size of his pension payout. So what did they do? They reappointed him as CEO because they couldn't reach an agreement. The whole thing stinks to high heaven. The ANC itself has come out with a statement this morning condemning this in no uncertain terms. Not the Zuma faction of the ANC, but the other faction of the ANC. And who knows where this is going to end up.
So are the days of our lives, Duncan. This is truly the soapy that we were speaking about earlier. Yeah. SABC should just film all of this, turn this into reality TV, and I think they'll be good. Eh? But it's actually laughable to think that not only wasting this amount of money, talking about 30 million rand payouts.
Yeah, and it's taxpayers' money at the end of the day.
Taxpayers' money, yeah. But also just, I mean, where is the leadership again in direction? I mean, if this was a privately owned entity, a company that was out to make money and really, you know, look after its shareholders, the entire board, you know, this company would not have been able to get this far.
No.
You know.
Stuff wouldn't have happened in the private sector. Anyway.
Can we end on a happy note on this Friday, please?
We can. It depends on you, Rechot. What's your pick?
Okay, so I've been playing with I'm a sucker for really good photography apps and really apps that I can do cool stuff on my phone with when it comes to imaging and video. The latest acquisition in my arsenal of apps is an app called Enlight. It's available for iTunes, and it's about 60 rand a night on the mobile store and the iTunes store. But what I like about this, I mean, you've played with a million photo editing apps, and they all do roughly the same thing. But what I like about this one in particular is it's got not only a vast set of functionalities. You can do all the stuff from changing colors to really tweaking your photograph, putting text over, putting anything over you want. But it's got a lot of subtleties in it, too, that allows you to really tweak your photographs a lot more than what you can with any other app. I mean, one of the examples is it's got this really cool feature where you can kind of superimpose two images over each other to create this really funky, wispy kind of illusion. Now, the reason why I like all of this stuff is because I often post to social media for various companies and for my own little projects. So I want to take a photograph, edit it, and then push it out without having to touch my computer. Now, I've played with a lot of apps that can do a lot of cool things. Adobe still has some of the strongest apps, in my opinion. But I really liked this. It really made the photography side a little bit more interesting. And it just, it, even though it has all the same features, it feels different. It feels like the color grades that you can tweak, the way that you can cut out certain parts of your image. It all seems fresher than any other app that I've played with. So if you're into photography and really want to, expose your photographs to another application, I would recommend Enlight. Well worth checking.
iOS only.
iOS only, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, you other guys. Is there any other platform? No.
You really have been drinking the Kool-Aid, Russell. We'll have to get you an Android phone. Wean you off it slowly.
Yeah.
My pick this week is a bit from left field, I suppose. I'm picking Opera, the web browser for desktop. What?
The 1970s call, they want their pick back.
have you used it lately?
No, I haven't.
Go ahead and install it. It's really, good. Really, really looking good. Yeah, I also haven't used it for a while, and a mate of mine said he started using it again. So I figured, let me try it out. And it's really good. With version, I think it's 45. It's really slick. It's got a beautiful user interface, much nicer, I think, than Chrome. Or any of the other browsers out there at the moment for that matter. But version 45 brings this beautiful sidebar with instant messaging integration. So you can integrate your WhatsApp, your Telegram, your Facebook Messenger into the side panel. In fact, you can add just about anything into the side panel because you can have third parties develop apps for it, little panel apps. So you can add things like Pocket, for example. There are various other ones. And they've done a really good job. It's a good-looking browser now. It renders websites very rapidly. It's got a built-in ad blocker. Please switch it off if you go to Tech Central. it's really cool tech. I think Opera has certainly come a long way since I last used it. What I like as well is that with a little plugin you can download from. I think it's on the Opera website. You can run just about any Google Chrome plugin as well.
That's nice.
So you can really continue using it as if you're a Chrome user and you've become addicted to all those extensions in Chrome, you can just bring them across to Opera.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's going to be my only hesitation with moving over to another browser is to lose all of those Chrome functionalities. But this looks great.
Yeah, give it a bash. I've been using it as my primary browser on my desktop for a couple of days now, and so far so good.
I see they offer free VPN as well, which is
they do. Cool. I haven't tried that yet because I pay for a VPN service already.
Sure.
So I haven't tried that, but when it comes time for renewal, maybe I'll consider using it. I presume the VPN only works inside the Opera browser, though.
Yeah, no, but I mean that's still good enough if you want to do streaming services or hide your browsing profile.
Yeah, I haven't tried it yet. It looks pretty good. By the way, I picked up something interesting. I can't remember if I mentioned in the last podcast, Rachat, WebRTC Network Limiter for Chrome. Do you know about that?
No.
Oh, so if you're using a VPN to mask your identity, say you're downloading some dodgy Creative Commons content, or you don't want the NSA seeing what you're up to.
For those PDF files you download.
Exactly. apparently, you can still. There's still a way of determining what your IP address is because of the WebRTC technology that's built into Chrome and which is used by things like Google Hangouts. Apparently that leaks your IP address.
Oh, yeah.
So what you need to do is install a plugin from the Chrome store. So here's a second pick, I guess, from me this week, called WebRTC Network Limiter, and that stops that from happening. I'm not sure how Netflix knows when you're using a VPN. Maybe they just have a list of IPs that are associated with
it. But this could be how they blocked it. I mean, remember we had that issue where they blocked it.
It'd be interesting to know, actually, because I haven't tried it, because you use the newest version of Netflix.
I'll definitely try this out.
Try installing the WebRTC Network Limiter plugin in Chrome and see if that then allows you to access Netflix in the US. I'd be keen to know. I'd be keen to know. In fact, let's try it out straight after this podcast.
Okay,
we'll report back next week. And that is our show for this week. As always, if you have any feedback, please email us. Oh, wait, I'm getting ahead of myself. We need to do our quiz results. Yeah, I remembered the quiz at the start, but almost forgot it at the end. let me kick off with the first question. Former MTN South Africa CEO Ahmad Farouk has joined which Pan-African telecommunications company? And the answer is Smile.
Nice. Sorry, I just completely lost my...
Well, let me jump into the second one while you bring up the show notes. Vodacom this week said it has lost... Sorry, has gone live with its first Internet of Things site. What 3GPP-backed IoT technology is it deploying, and who is doing the deployment for it? And the answer is Narrowband IoT, and the company is Huawei.
Huawei. The third question, now that I find my show notes, Adapt IT this week announced the acquisition of which technology supplier to the hospitality industry? And the answer, I'm sure you've seen this label before, Micros.
Micros, not to be confused with Microsoft. And our fourth question, Telkom subsidiary BCX will pump 60 million rand into which programming skills development hub? And that's We Think Code.
Yeah, that was also really
great
news.
Yeah. Mm.
And the last question, Apple surpassed a market capitalization milestone this week. What was it? And the answer there, it's a market value that exceeded 800 billion US dollars for the first time.
If you want to convert that into rand, it's about 11 trillion rand.
Nice. You can buy a few things with
it. I think that's about twice our GDP.
Wow.
Just to give you an idea of the size of Apple, how many iPhones they sell. And that's it. As always, if you've got any feedback, our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. And from Rechid and myself, until next time, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.